Welcome to the Gentleman Rapio.
Wow.
Yeah, close enough.
Wow. That was as close as I've ever heard it.
Did he say Rapio?
Did you say Rapio? Did it get Rapio in here?
Maybe.
Well, I don't think so. I mean,
not yet.
Maybe it was in the back of my mind, but
the way that Jeff's dressed, he's asking for it.
Yeah, he really is. It'll be his own fault.
Yeah, probably.
Yeah.
It was last time.
Yeah. It's always your fault. All right, so welcome back to the Gentleman Radio. It's brought to you by thebuzzmedia.com. So, Josh, do you have something to say about that at all? Or?
Yeah, if you're already at the website, which obviously you are on a daily basis, if not multiple times a day, take a minute, give us some feedback, leave some comments, nudie pics. Just let us know how we're doing, or just use this as troll bait, whatever it takes. Yes. We want to know how we're doing.
Whatever it takes.
Okay, so we are the Gentlemen. I'm Patrick.
I'm Charles.
This is Josh.
And Jeffrey. And by the way, one more thing is that we do still have that open invitation that if you listen to the show, we will allow you on as a guest.
Oh, God, we've totally fucked this up. We're calling you Josh.
Yeah.
Well, oh, that's good.
He called him. Oh, I called him Josh first, didn't I?
Yeah,
oh, that was
go.
My bad.
I've submitted. It's all right.
Should we rewind?
His secret identity.
Josh, a.k.a. Nero. It depends on how drunk he is and what his secret identity is.
That was my bad. I'm a huge asshole, so...
Nice.
Amongst circles.
I'm glad it wasn't my fault. Anyway, to our first segment, we're going to be talking about a couple different movies. We maybe agree a little bit on them, possibly disagree disparagingly on some. The first one we want to talk about is Abraham Lincoln, Vampire Hunter. I really enjoyed this movie. A lot of people said that the pacing was bad. A little bit of an admission here, I was kind of drunk when I saw it. I know this might be shocking. I was a little drunk when I saw it, so I felt the pacing was perfect. I was fast-forwarding through the crap and enjoying the fuck out of the action. Epic train fight with axes, double-teaming vampires, which sounds like a porno, but with axes?
It sounds like a good porno, though.
I would watch it.
Yeah.
That sounds like Wayne.
So, look, here's the thing. I read the book, which I highly recommend if you haven't read it. It's very good. And it's very detailed into, you know, Abraham Lincoln's life. And basically what it does is it sort of weaves the vampire stuff into his life. And so you'll have these conflicts that come up in his actual life, and the reason for them are vampires ultimately. So it's a much kind of fuller plate in the book. I understand as a movie you can't really do that, but I was a little puzzled because Seth Graham Smith, who wrote the book, also wrote the screenplay, and I wouldn't have thought that the author of the book would have gutted it so badly. But my big problem with this movie is that, like, up until, you know, he gets the top hat and the beard, he could have been anybody. It doesn't, like, it, there wasn't enough detail on him as Abraham Lincoln for it to actually matter, and they
so
kind of gloss
like
over
a Superman origin story till he gets the cape.
Yeah, well, they
and then the glasses.
The problem is though they kind of gloss over him becoming president. Just all of a sudden, he's a president.
Suddenly president.
Yeah, yeah, and that's kind of a big deal. I think if you're going to make an American president a vampire hunter, you might want to put some effort into that part of it.
Ben Franklin, werewolf trainer.
Like, right. There was a lot more effort into making him a senator and his, like, Douglas debates instead of, like, becoming president.
By the way, yeah. Awesome cameo, Stephen Douglas. I can't think of
Alan Tudyk.
Yes.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah, there was a great cast in that movie because I thought...
I really thought he was going to die. I was waiting for him to die.
And, oh gosh, what's the... I can't think of the actor's name, but he plays, like, one of the McPoyles on... Always Sunny, and then he's Lloyd on Breakout Kings, but he played Swift in this. I love that guy. I love that actor a lot. I just cannot think of his name.
I don't know who he is from that, but yeah, he was excellent in the movie.
One of my problems, and it's a real minor beef, because I know it's Hollywood and everything like that, but for when the author and the screenwriter keeps talking about how painstakingly historically accurate it was, they have as Mary Todd a really hot Ramona Flowers.
Super hot.
And super duper hot, and not a mustache to be seen on her.
She was a beast of a woman.
I know, yeah. And we talked about this a little bit, Jeff, and I was saying I kind of was picturing John Goodman in a wig.
Right.
That's very
good
Todd
choice.
Like,
you know what else they did?
Maybe the eye patch, too, from
Melissa McCarthy with your beard.
They also totally disregarded, like, two of Lincoln's kids, too. Like, they focused on, like, the one kid, but he had...
Yeah, he
like
had
three
children,
and like all of them died before adulthood, except for like one of them.
Because it was obviously aliens. I'm vampires.
Right. Well, and that's the premise that the book takes is that the vampires are royally fucking with him through his whole life because they know what he's up to.
Basically, life raping him.
Well, do you think all these omissions would have worked in the movie? I mean, you know how you have
that's
to cut
the thing.
So
I mean,
much.
It's the Hollywood thing, so that's why I understand why they made her hot.
It's sort of like, I mean...
Well, and I'm not complaining. Well, no.
As far as the cuts are concerned, though, I think that there was a script that could have been done that incorporated a little bit more of the historical stuff and a little bit more Lincolnness to the Lincoln parts, you know, that would have still worked. One thing I really dug about it, though, is it's shot like, you know, like a Merchant Ivory film or like, you know, that sort of like hyper-realistic camera style that you see in English television and that sort of thing, like their period pieces. And so I thought it was interesting that it looked a lot like that. The film quality was a lot like that. And then all of a sudden, vampires and, like, massive action scenes. So it was really interesting because it's like, you know, I spent some time with my aunt and uncle who just watched the crap out of those sorts of movies all the time. And it's just, like, boring, boring, boring. It would have been pretty awesome with vampires.
I mean, I loved the action scenes. I thought it was a fun movie, but I would not...
Great summer movie.
It's not a great movie, but it was a fun movie.
I think it stretched the bounds a little bit when they were, like, you know, discusing horses around, when, like, they're actually throwing horses at each other during that one stampede scene.
I was laughing my ass off.
Yeah. I mean, that's the thing. Like,
he just threw the fucking horse.
You can't take it that seriously, but the movie takes itself very seriously, which is sort of a weird...
Although I would argue tone. From Fright Night, Jerry kind of threw and blew up a house and ripped out a gas line and was pretty badass.
Well, okay, that's true, but he didn't. I guess
he could have thrown a horse if he put.
Sure,
the inclination
he could have, but I guess the image.
He wasn't
like,
a show-off vampire. He's like, I could potentially throw this horse.
I'm talking about the specific image of a guy grabbing a horse and tossing it at somebody else. Looked a little silly. Yeah. That's all I'm saying. I mean, I liked the movie. I thought it was cool. I just liked the book a lot better. That's really where my biggest beef is with that.
Take note, Zack Snyder, as you're working on the Superman movie.
Yeah, right.
That's
another horse checking, chapter one.
Right?
Another lesson.
I'm kind of hoping Up It with a Blue Whale, throwing it at the Enterprise.
Like, obviously you read the book before a movie was even, you know, in production, but I always think you should always watch the movie before reading the book.
Yeah, usually it's a good
always
choice.
Because everybody always says, "Oh, the book is so much better," and it usually is.
Although I would kind of argue for like
so, it's
Lord
better
of
to watch
Rings.
The movie first. You love the movie, then you read the book, and you love the book.
I don't know.
Instead of reading the book, you love the book, and you watch the movie, and then you're kind of disappointed.
We've had this conversation before, Jeff, and the thing is, for me, like I honestly, that doesn't happen to me all that often. Like where I don't like a movie because I read the book, because I really don't expect the same thing. Like I don't dislike this movie. I think the kind of the closest analogy I can make to it is, or closest comparison rather, is Jurassic Park, the book and the movie. Like, the movie's basically like the theme park ride of the book, you know, where the book has a lot more detail, it's a lot more hardcore, all that kind of stuff.
90% less Jeff Goldblum.
Right, but the book is amazing, and the movie's amazing. This is kind of similar, only the book is amazing, and the movie's pretty good.
Although it is funny sometimes reading like reviews of movies from people that read the book, and it's not exactly the way they thought. Like
I didn't
The Hunger Games
that.
With all the kids coming out screaming about how fucked up the movie was because they made a character black.
Well,
and like, it turns out the character was black in the book.
You know, and Roger Ebert actually famously, or at least famously for me because it annoyed me, talked a lot of crap about Fellowship of the Ring because primarily in his review he cited that Hobbiton did not look the way that he had imagined in his mind, and it's like, that's not Peter Jackson's problem. You know, like, how you picture something in the book is not the director's fault if they mess it up. Now, I would argue if you take something like the first Harry Potter movie, it's like, you know, Chris
They're
Columbus...
The tone.
Yeah, Chris Columbus messed the tone up and he focused on the wrong things. So, you know, there's a big problem. But but just because something doesn't look the way that you expected it to look in your mind's eye, obviously the director's not going to know exactly what you thought when you were reading the descriptions of the book, so... So let's move on from there. So
I guess we'll talk about Moonrise Kingdom a bit.
Moonrise Kingdom. I liked it a lot. I haven't seen the last couple of Wes Anderson movies. I wasn't really that interested in them. I think I started watching the... What was the one with Bill Murray where he was like a fishboat captain or something?
Life Aquatic.
I started watching that and I couldn't really get into it. No. I sort of felt that he suffered by not having Owen Wilson co-writing with him.
You know, I don't want to derail you. I recommend you go back and watch it again. The first time I saw it,
I said, I didn't really watch much of it.
The first time I saw it, I hated it, but I went back and watched it again and I think it's hilarious
and
now.
I never saw the Darjeeling Limited, which, you know, not that it didn't interest me, I just never got around to it.
Okay.
But I love Moonrise Kingdom. And, I mean, it's not as, like, you know, gut-bustingly funny as, like, Royal Tenenbaums or one of my personal favorites and highly underrated, Bottle Rocket.
Bottle Rocket's one of the best.
But it's, you know, it's pretty much at its core a love story about 12-year-olds. So, I mean, you have to know that going in, but it is, like, filled with a lot of great actors. and it definitely has that quirkiness of a Wes Anderson movie. And I thought it was really, really good.
So the thing about Moonrise Kingdom,
like 12-year-olds, but they're 12-year-olds, but they act like adults, which is almost part of the joke.
Kind of creepy,
you know. But oh, like there's some parts that are band. Really creepy, actually. Yeah.
But it's 12-year-olds in love with other 12-year-olds.
But yeah, and that's, yeah, that's
it's
the
not
thing,
like targeting the pedo market.
Right. Bill Murray hitting on a 12-year-old.
Yeah, there's oh, God.
Which well, I would watch.
In fact, Bill Murray gets very upset when he finds out that this little bastard kid is romancing his daughter. Like it's, you know, they don't the adults in the movie don't really treat it as like. Something that's kind of quaint or whatever. They take it very seriously, in as serious a way as you can take in a Wes Anderson movie. But the love story between the two little kids is very earnest and heartfelt, and it's hard not to get kind of swept up in.
Ernest goes to Moonrise Kingdom.
It's hard to not get swept up in that story, though. I mean, they're really
that.
The story. I mean, if you take away the Wes Anderson flair, the story is very compelling in and of itself.
Yeah, I mean, forget the fact that they're 12-year-olds. I mean, it is a good love story,
right?
You know, quite
and
frankly.
Well, and another thing is that the motivations behind like how they kind of come together and why they choose each other makes a lot of sense in its own context.
And I almost think it works better because it's more realistic. Because when you are 12, you do have this, you know, extremely romantic version of love.
Right, and it's very intense, and you think it's forever. You're going to run away and be together forever.
Yeah,
all that
and
stuff.
You don't sort of have, like, you know, you watch that with adults in a movie, you're kind of like, ah, fuck that. You're going to break up in 2 weeks.
Yeah, it's before the cynicism comes in to love.
Do for movies, for Romeo and Juliet stories, they're a lot older. A lot of people don't remember that Shakespeare wrote it.
Yeah, they're like 14.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And when you think about it, you're like, that's pretty fucked up.
Well, and the thing is, though,
seriously, about... Seriously, kind of pulled this off in a movie, like a modern movie, and it was done pretty well?
Very well. Excellent movie. It's probably my favorite serious movie of the year.
Yeah,
so
currently
far.
It's absolutely my favorite serious film of the year, I think, you know. There's a lot of stuff coming out this holiday season, so we'll see if it hangs on. But yeah, it was phenomenal. Now, the thing is, though, it's probably not going to change your mind if you absolutely hate Wes Anderson's style.
Right.
If that bothers you, it's very Wes Anderson. Like, it's very, very much his sort of movie.
Very quirky 70s style.
But you know what? It actually works, though, because it's set in the 60s. So it's like, you know, the aesthetic works there in a way that some of his other ones don't necessarily.
But even
like
so, if you're not prepared for it, you need to know what you're getting into.
Yeah, no,
and
right.
then maybe give it a second consideration. Because like you said earlier, his movies really do need to kind of soak into you.
Absolutely.
Before you really can get the joke or get whatever he's saying.
Yeah, like you take Rushmore, for instance. It's like, that's one of those movies where you really have to kind of watch it a few times to really start getting everything.
Hmm.
Well, Bottle Rocket is one, too. It's so overlooked by people. But it's like...
There's so many subtle jokes.
Yeah,
like jokes.
Like, you know, characters will use the wrong word, and they never make reference to it in the movie at all. You just have to know what the right word is and understand that he's he's an idiot and he's trying to make himself look smart, but he's using the wrong words, and I love that in the background of a
scene, him getting his ass kicked and just like listening to it and stuff like that, where it's not even the focus of the scene.
But I love that Wes Anderson as a director in all of his films kind of leaves a lot of stuff up to the audience. Like he doesn't point things out to you. It's like you have to be paying attention, you have to get it yourself.
Yeah, and there's some things where it's just like the line is delivered so earnestly or what have you that like I saw it in a theater there, you know, it wasn't a packed theater, but there was about 30 other people in there and they were laughing at a lot of parts, but there were a lot of lines where I would be laughing my ass off and nobody else was laughing.
And that was the same in my theater too. There were a lot of lines that I was laughing at. Nobody
else.
As a line, it's not that funny. It's just the fact that it's this 12-year-old kid saying it and being all
and being very serious
and
very earnest about it.
As a litmus test, I think a little bit is a while back somebody released this like God of War indie trailer directed like Wes Anderson style.
Oh god, that was hilarious.
And I thought it was one of the best things because it really, a lot of people saw it as just a parody or they were mad about it, and I was like, I think it really pays homage to his film style.
Oh, absolutely.
And it's cool because it's God of War and that's amazing.
Yeah.
I think somebody that can kind of laugh at that a little bit and be like, oh dude, I picked this up, I love that, would enjoy almost all of his movies, you know. As you said, Jeff, you know, The Life Aquatic for you wasn't as good. You didn't, I mean, kind of got bored into it.
Yeah, and again, I didn't even see the whole thing, so don't yell at me for my opinion on it. It's
no, that's okay.
Well,
and again, like I said, I didn't really like it until about the second or third time I watched
it. Gunfight.
I hated it the first. I was actually actively angry about it the first time I saw it because I was so into
the
Wes Anderson.
The only reason I watched it is my dad was a big Jacques Cousteau enthusiast.
Oh, right.
About, like, Undersea Life and stuff, and I was like, okay, I gotta watch this. And it was like, what the fuck, man? Like, what? You know, I just couldn't get over it. But I loved the David Bowie covers. Oh my god, that was amazing. That really is like, okay, I'll give it a second view. Did you really Unlimited? Yeah, I saw it twice, and I just...
I've only seen half of that, and it's not because I lost interest. I just... I was really tired when I started watching it. I fell asleep, and I just haven't revisited
it
yet.
It feels pretty slow. It's a good...
I think you were just tired of waiting for the half-nudity of Natalie Portman.
No, honestly, right? I was enjoying what I saw of it. I just ended up going to sleep.
I think for me, the thing that I started watching it and got into a bit more was this, like, the theme of brothers and realizing that sometimes, like, my brother drives me absolutely fucking mad. Good thing he doesn't listen to the podcast. But you know what I mean? And then it's just like, you still reconcile. Like, you do this unbelievable bullshit, but you're like, oh, yeah, that's my fucking brother. Okay, okay.
Yep.
All right, so let's move on to a very...
Hot button issue.
Very contentious. Very contentious subject is Ted by Seth.
And not the talks,
ooh,
not the science talks.
It's the directorial debut of Seth MacFarlane of The Family Guy, and it's a live-action movie based on a kid who makes a wish that his teddy bear will come to life because he doesn't have any friends. And then his teddy bear comes to life, but then when he gets to be 36, his teddy bear is still living with him and fucking things up for him. And just about how the two of them try and reconcile, and the guy... tries to have a life with his girlfriend.
His girlfriend is
Mila Kunis.
So let's shove that teddy bear in the fucking garbage disposal.
Right, seriously. And Mark Wahlberg is the main character. MacFarlane does the voice for Ted and does all the motion capture for him as well. And I loved it. I thought it was hilarious. There's tons of pop culture references, and it's got very much toilet humor and kind of offsides sort of things like that. But what I liked about it is that it really takes a lot of kind of genre cliches, like the sort of bad relationship movie, and the Magic Buddy movies from, like, the 80s, like, you know, like E.T. and shit like that. It takes, like, a lot of those conventions and then kind of tweaks them and plays with them a lot, and I really enjoyed it. So much so that I recommended it to my good friend Jeff, who went to see it, and how'd you like it, Jeff?
I thought it was complete dog shit. I did not think it was very funny at all. I thought all of the best jokes I had seen in the trailer many times, so by the time I saw them in the movie, it didn't even make me chuckle. There were a few chuckles throughout it. I thought 90% of the jokes were extremely cheap and easy and were based on this teddy bear using profanity. And that was the joke. And it went on and on and on. I think it almost would have went better, even though I like the premise that this kid makes a wish and then 20 years later he's still stuck with it. I think it would have worked better if he was still a kid and he had this really profane bear. Because, like, especially when it comes to the Thunder Song, which is in the Red Band trailer, I don't think it's funny with Mark Wahlberg in there singing to him.
I think that's hilarious. Because
it's
like you've got a 36...
cheesy. If it's a little kid singing that song, then I would have laughed.
So the joke, Jeff, and I don't think I should have to explain it. The joke is that he's 36 years old, in bed with his girlfriend, with his live-in girlfriend. The thunderclap hits... And he's about to piss his pants until his teddy bear comes in and sing a thunder song with him.
And
that's
if you
the
don't
ridiculousness
think that is
of it.
Hilarious.
And the thunder song itself,
really not for you.
The song itself is hilarious. I don't. I honestly really don't understand how we're so far apart on this. I really don't.
I don't know. There was nothing in the movie that made me laugh hard.
I saw it with my friend Peter, who you know, Peter Leon, who we make movies with. And he and his wife both loved it too. Peter
What's
went
his
back,
website?
PeterLeon.net.
You can find him on the internet.
Yes. So he and his wife went. They loved it. He went back and saw it again yesterday. He's going to go back on Tuesday to see it.
See, and that blows my mind because I barely made it through the first time.
I want to see it again because there's a lot of jokes that I want to revisit. And like, so, you know, you asked me earlier online, like, what jokes I thought were funny. And I'm not going to sit and, like, spoil a bunch of jokes. But there's one in particular in the very beginning of the movie that made me laugh. And I don't really understand how you could not like it was the bit about the opening narration with Patrick Stewart, where he's doing the opening narration and he says that there's nothing more powerful than a young boy's wish except for an Apache helicopter, and then he goes on to describe why the Apache helicopter is more powerful.
Yeah, did not find it funny.
That's fucking hilarious.
That Patrick Stewart and his ships,
right?
Yeah.
So and
did
then
not find it funny.
You didn't find it funny when like
didn't even smile
when they're beating up the Jewish kid because it's Christmas
time.
This is how much of a loner this kid is.
Because you're an anti-Semite.
How much of a loner this kid is he comes over.
I mean,
he tries.
The joke was anti-Semitic, but
it's not the joke. The joke I'm trying to get to isn't even anti-Semitic. It's that he tries.
It's a joke about anti-Semitism.
He's such a loner that he tries to come up and join in with the beating of this Jewish kid, and the Jewish kid tells him to get lost. That was what the funny joke was. Yeah. And so I don't know. There's a lot of that kind of stuff, and that's sort of those are sort of the things that are going on.
Well, Jeff, let me ask you this. During the trailer, the first time you saw the whole Thunderclap song, did you laugh that time?
Very first time, yeah. I thought it was funny.
So there was some inherent humor. Maybe you're just kind of like a one-trick pony and you don't laugh a second time.
I mean, I don't know.
You're saying they should have kept it for the movie, one of those jokes.
All the best jokes were in the trailer.
See, I don't know. I disagree completely on that. I also really like the kind of running gag of Flash Gordon being an important part of their life, particularly when they eventually get to party with Sam. Gosh, I can't think of the guy's name now.
Is it actually Flash Gordon?
Is it Sam Jones? Sam Jones. From Flash Gordon. I don't know. I loved it. I thought it was great. Flash. Jeff thought it sucked. So, moving along.
It was slightly better than Adam Sandler.
So, agree to disagree.
Okay, hang on a sec. Because he's bringing up That's My Boy. I would just like to throw some stuff out here, some figures, because I knew this was coming.
Did I make money? Because
No. The movie. No, because you said that I would probably like That's My Boy if I liked Ted. That's not true. Because I know that
they're both profane just to be profane. And
I know that critics and you know, film critics' opinions don't necessarily matter completely. I'm a film critic, so I happen to think about I have to take it seriously. You know, Ted right now is 68% fresh on Rotten Tomatoes with 81 fresh reviews, 37 rotten reviews. It's 62 on Metacritic with, out of 36 reviews, there are only 3 negative reviews. Versus That's My Boy, which is 23% on Rotten Tomatoes with 21 fresh and 72 rotten. And it's 30 on Metacritic with 25 critics. So
wow,
Jeff, I'm just pointing out.
I like That's My Boy. I thought it was horrible.
No, I know that, but I'm just saying that a lot more people like Ted, including me, than liked That's My Boy. So it's not like they're right next to each other. That's all I'm saying.
Okay, so really,
they're
quick,
both in
final,
like you know the really cheesy, easy jokes that are so edgy that they're funny. There's no cleverness to it.
Right.
I disagree. So
anyway, quick like final word, Patrick. You're recommending to see it. Why should people see it?
Well, I think that they should see it. I have to make the qualifier, which I did in my written review, which you can read at thebuzzmedia.com, is that if you don't like Family Guy at all, then stay the fuck away from it. If you don't like, you know, scatological humor, you don't like a bunch of pop culture references, then stay the hell away from it, you know? But if you're into that stuff, if you like, say, the first 3 seasons of Family Guy, back when Seth MacFarlane actually gave a shit, then you have a good chance of enjoying it.
Yeah.
So,
Jeff, final word. Why should people not see this movie?
Well, I would say the same thing. I mean, if you are a big fan of Family Guy, then you'll probably like that movie.
Yeah.
Because Family Guy is a piece of dog shit show. So, and yeah, I did like
the first couple
seasons.
I think we have our problem. I think that we stumbled across the issue. So,
I kind of got to go with Jeff a little bit. I'm just not the biggest fan of Family Guy. I think sometimes good jokes.
He goes for the easy jokes.
I have to qualify the Family Guy bit because what I'm saying about Family Guy is the pop culture.
You're talking about the first 3 seasons.
But what I'm not talking about though is it does not follow the Family Guy structure where it's like the super easy like, hey, remember when blah blah, and they go to the flashbacks and all this. There's like 2 flashbacks in the movie, and it's actually like story driven and set up. So, I mean, what I'm saying is the quality of the first 3 seasons of Family Guy, which I thought was good, versus, like, the dog shit that it is now.
Yeah, and so, I'm not trying to say, like, be, like, hipsterish and be like, oh, I don't like it. You know, occasionally I'll watch it, and something does make me laugh, but it feels more and more that it takes something really off the wall that they do, that they're just, you know, I want to say manatees and balls, but we all know where that came from. I almost think it's more giant wall, and then the dark goes on. And,
yeah.
Okay. Good enough.
See, but that's not the way that it plays out here.
I guess depending a little bit on how you feel about Seth MacFarlane's writing style is how much you will enjoy this movie.
I think the deal with Seth MacFarlane is
not even really writing style because it's not really, you know, like you said, it doesn't have the whole, you know, well, this is like when blah blah blah, and then all of a sudden it shows like this, but it has nothing like that in it. It's just sort of his sense of humor. I mean, like, so if you watch The Family Guy every week and you think it's hilarious, then this movie you'll probably find hilarious.
Excellent.
Okay, so let's move on to the next topic. We're going to switch gears from movies into comic books a little bit. So, Charlie?
Yes, so I want to talk a little bit about Spider-Man, which sounds a little weird saying Spider-Man.
Spider-Man?
So he expects
sounds like,
a,
like it's a Jewish guy, Spider-Man.
Right. Spider-Man.
Spider-Man.
It is the big crossover event between the regular 616 Marvel Universe and the Ultimate Universe.
Wait. 616 and Ultimate, what is that, Charlie?
Yeah, well, that's, again, it says regular Marvel continuity versus Ultimate Marvel, which is... I feel like Ultimate Marvel is a stupid sandbox that they just pick and choose for the movies, which works out pretty good.
Basically, the idea behind it was that there's all this continuity going on that people are going to have a hard time kind of getting into, like jumping into Spider-Man or jumping into X-Men.
Right.
So they kind of rebooted everything and took it from the origin story so that people could kind of,
just kind of start back at the beginning at square
right.
one.
But they did it without wiping out regular continuity like, say,
exactly.
DC did.
Yeah, well, DC does every couple of years. And it was a really, really good idea, but things started to get very messy, and we had a few events, Ultimatum, different things.
When you've got characters eating each other, that's not so good.
No, because they're on bath salts, I mean.
Right,
Anyway, so...
You know what, that guy... only marijuana in the system, apparently.
Apparently. I think it's a lie, but...
I think it's a zombie. You think is that what you think?
I think so.
Okay.
Maybe he's on a bunch of shit that just doesn't really show up in tests.
Well, because you can't really test for the bath salt or the K2 or the,
Exactly.
All that stuff.
Anyway. So back to that, it's just a really weird, basically, Peter Parker... a little bit of spoilers here for everybody. They're only on issue 2 so far, so you can catch up pretty easily. Peter Parker, Spider-Man, regular universe... ends up, dropping in on Mysterio for something, gets jaunted into Ultimate Marvel, and the first thing he runs into is Ultimate Spider-Man, who Peter Parker in the Ultimate Universe is dead.
Yeah.
Again, sorry if that's a spoiler, but that's been like 6 months.
Oh,
so.
Man.
Yeah. We can blame Donald Glover for this.
Right. But it's actually, it's really cool. I kind of like that they have tweaked a bunch of things and taken it in different directions. It's really cool. You have him. They have their dust up. It's 2 Spider-Men. Okay, like who are you?
Now
are you?
I would hope, and I don't want to cut you off, but I would hope that the 616 Spider-Man would just
could have been an
wipe
adult.
The goddamn floor with Miles Morales, because I mean, just because he's a kid.
Be racial?
No, because he's a kid and he's not very experienced. Whereas the 616 Spider-Man
is a 30-year-old man
who's been doing this for a really fucking long time, like 15 years.
Right.
So,
yeah, 15 years versus experience versus about a year.
Yeah.
And they kind of talk about that. Miles has a few different powers, like a venom sting, and he can turn invisible. Stuff I didn't really know about the character, but he did. So it kind of caught, Peter Parker, Spider-Man off guard, because he's like, oh...
Spider-Sense should not allow that, but go on.
Right,
plus,
so.
He's probably young and naive and doesn't know that he should be getting his ass beat. And he's
right, because actually there's
like,
a...
Maybe
there's
he's
a cool,
trying
yeah.
some shit.
He's
that,
like, I'm just going to bust some ass here and just see what happens.
That's true. And actually, there's a funny thing where he knocks him out quick, and he goes to take his mask off to see if it's Peter Parker, because he's trying to figure out... in comics, it's always, is that person dead? Are they coming back? And then, so there's a cool thing where he's like, dude... And he, gets up and, kicks him off the roof. He's like, not cool. Unmasking, very not cool. And then, a couple panels later, he pulls off the kid's mask with webbing on the street. And he's like, what the fuck's going on, et cetera, et cetera. Miles gets the drop on him, knocks him out, takes him to Ultimate Nick Fury.
Nice.
Which is really cool, because Ultimate Nick Fury kind of had a very big soft spot
for
Peter
Ultimate
Parker. Peter
Parker.
Because
he
basically ended up becoming, a surrogate father to him.
Yeah.
As well as Uncle Ben. And
Samuel L. Jackson was like a surrogate father to Tobey Maguire.
Yeah,
I'd pay to see that.
I know, right?
I'd
that
pay
sounds
to see
amazing.
That.
Well, especially because it's.
I think that should be the next direction of the new movie. Should really
just reboot everything.
Lock
again.
It up. Yeah.
Yeah.
By the way, this is a little bit of a digression. Did you guys know? This is just a little tidbit that the new Amazing Spider-Man movie almost crossed over with the Avengers.
Uh huh.
Like Oscorp they almost put Oscorp in the background, which would have been a really fucking cool thing. Go on.
Yeah, it would have been great, but.
Damn,
screw
you send
everything
pictures.
Up. Yeah. So they have that, and I think the biggest thing so far that really has got me was a little touching was, there's a part Nick Fury basically believes him. He's like, you know what? And he tells him his story. Say hypothetically you've been a superhero for 15 years and you'd be trying to hide your identity. You end up somewhere else. Apparently everyone knows that Peter Parker is Spider-Man, and I'm kind of freaking out,
Yeah.
And he's like, you know what? And I believe you. So he's like, he tests Miles, take him around, show him what happened to Peter.
Yeah.
And then as he's flying off, there's a part where he's just looking up at the helicopter, and he's like, Peter Parker. And it's cool, because, it's like that tender kind of moment.
Well, I imagine, between the different characters, there's got to be a lot of emotional stuff going on, where,
right.
like Aunt May, she's going to be sad, Peter Parker died. Peter Parker showing up as a grown man, she gets to see what he looks like. Peter Parker seeing Gwen Stacy not dead would probably be emotional for him.
Which
you know?
Is going to be great. I think it's going to be an excellent ride. And
I think that there's a lot of really cool things going on here. However, I'm a little bit not sold on Mysterio being like this major villain because, I mean,
you know,
his fuck Mysterio is all I'm saying.
Yeah, he's always just kind of
Kevin
been a
Smith
little
killed
pain
him a long
ass.
Time ago.
Yeah.
And they
it's a little, ridiculous, but they really haven't explained as far as what he's doing and how he's doing what he is. Which is kind of cool. So we'll see where that goes. Maybe not the best choice for a villain, but...
Good work.
You know, we'll see.
Yeah.
Anyway, the next thing, kind of the last topic for today is some upcoming stuff. I want to talk a little bit about some... Maybe this rumored thing that's coming up at San Diego Comic-Con.
Oh yeah, there's supposed to be a couple announcements of two movies, I think, that might have a little bit of buzz with them. I know Charlie's excited about one. That's Guardians of the Galaxy. Mm-hmm. This one's kind of, you know, completely off my radar, so I'm excited to hear what you guys have to say about that. And the other, which looks fantastic, is The Man with Iron Fist, starring Russell Crowe and Lucy Liu, and it's kind of this over-the-top feudal China kung fu. Exactly.
Right.
And we're going to get into those.
So since we're short on time, we're going to kind of run through this a little bit fast. We're running over time here. So the Guardians of the Galaxy is basically Marvel kind of introducing their sort of cosmic... their whole cosmic thing into the Avengers.
Yeah.
From what I've read, Thanos is going to play a major part in it. Mm-hmm. So that's where we're going to see him next. Guardians of the Galaxy came out in the 60s. They showed back up again in the 90s and then again in the odds somewhere.
They're fairly obscure, and it's an odd choice for
it's a weird thing, because there's a lot of more accessible characters that they could use here, but Guardians of the Galaxy are from the future, basically. They've come back in time to try and avert some crisis or another.
Yeah.
And so I guess that's probably how they're going to interact. One of the guys running around with them has Captain America's shield in one of the iterations, so I'm not really sure what group of characters are going to be using for
we
this.
We don't know who's showing up to the party, but it'll be interesting.
I mean,
it will maybe explain and tie into Thanos at the end.
If Rocket Raccoon or whatever the guy is, like this little raccoon with him, like a sentient raccoon with a laser gun, if he shows up, that's going to be weird. I don't know. I'm actually fully okay with that. Maybe not so much the raccoon.
I'm okay with the raccoon.
Well, we've already established Howard the Duck. We could work him in, too.
Oh, let's not talk about Howard the Duck.
Oh, old wounds.
All right, so that's Guardians of the Galaxy. That should be kind of cool. Marvel's really awesome, so they're doing good things. So, next thing is...
The Man with the Iron Fist. And wow, what a trailer, and where the hell did this come from?
Holy cow, right?
Yeah.
So, it's produced by Quentin Tarantino. It's directed by RZA, right?
Yeah.
With fight choreography by Corey Yoon. So, it looks like just this batshit crazy... It's got Russell Crowe in it. It's like a batshit crazy, like, Western kung fu movie with Lucy Liu and a bunch of blood. There's, like, dude punches a guy's eyeball out at one point. It looks pretty fantastic.
Blades flying. Yeah. It's completely over the top, and... Completely enticing.
I think definitely 3D because of the eye coming out. Like,
That's what 3D is made for.
Yeah. Some people might think it's kind of weird that RZA would be directing this, but anybody with even the smallest knowledge of the Wu-Tang Clan would know that he is completely obsessed with martial arts movies.
And they also know that Wu-Tang ain't nothing to fuck with, so right off the bat, you can handle himself.
You got that one unlocked then, yeah.
So,
you think you just check yourself before you wreck yourself.
Two more words to highlight the flick. Pam Grier.
Right?
Come on, you can't go... And that's probably the reason why they did 3D, because you got to get dimension of the Greer you can.
Yeah. So, it looks like a perfect fit for who's doing it. You kind of always had to know that RZA was going to come out with some kind of a kung fu movie at some point.
But what a kick to the eyeball that is, or a punch to the eyeball.
Right, it looks awesome. So that's going to lead me right into my first recommendation, because we need to get this wrapped up. My first recommendation is Sukiyaki Western Django, which is... a film by Takashi Miike. It was also produced by Quentin Tarantino, and he has a role in it. But basically, it's kind of a similar concept, really. It's a samurai western. But it's not just like a western-style movie with a bunch of samurais. It's like they've got samurai swords, and they've got six-shooters in it. Like, it's basically like this big... these two gangs clashing. It's a pretty classic sort of western sort of story with a big gang clashing and one other guy coming in that's sort of unaffiliated, having to deal with the two different factions. Really badass, really over the top, although a little low key for Takashi Miike, if you've ever seen any of his movies before. But check that out, it's a lot of fun. Charlie?
My recommendation, basically a beer this week, is hearing about a Hoptimum. It's their annual release. This one's about 10.5%. Super hoppy, super delicious. Didn't realize it was 10.5%. One day I had a couple after work and hadn't eaten anything yet since breakfast, and good times.
Right. Nero?
I was having a conversation with producer Dan earlier today about some of the sweet old RPG games we were playing. So it got me thinking about some PlayStation 2 games that I hadn't played in a while. So I've been using this fantastic emulator called the PCS X2. And over the years, it's undergone a lot of kind of just beta iterations, completely independent. And they have a lot of really stable versions out. So if you like playing old PS2 games on your PC, you can plug your controller right into the machine. PCS X2. I highly recommend it.
All right. Excellent, Jeff.
All right. My recommendation is going to be for a new TV show that's finally coming to the Cartoon Network, which is Black Dynamite.
Hell yeah.
And you can bet your sweet ass and half a titty that I'm looking forward to that. I saw the pilot probably about a year ago, if not longer. And the pilot is just absolutely hysterical. It's more ridiculous than the movie, as crazy as that might sound.
That's amazing it could possibly be.
But it's just as hilarious, if not even more hilarious. I mean, definitely go online and watch the pilot. And you can see, you know, basically Kermit, he's known as Curtis the Frog, becoming a hardcore gangster and trying to teach the kids to do drugs. And, you know, he may not have ever told anybody this, but Black Dynamite used to be a children.
Dynamite! Dynamite!
So he definitely comes back to, you know, raise hell. And it's just absolutely hysterical, and I cannot wait for that TV show.
Excellent.
Is this a spinoff of Black Dolomite?
No, Black Dynamite is a... Have you seen the movie?
Yeah.
You seen the movie? Oh, hell. Go see the... You should watch the movie. It's on...
Oh, it's on Netflix.
This is the Michael J. White movie, right?
It's a brilliant, brilliant movie. It's
well,
really
All right.
So, that's about wraps it up for today. For the Gentleman Radio, I'm Patrick.
I'm Charles.
Josh.
And Jeff. What?
You don't have a stinger.
You don't have a stinger?
Oh, yeah. I'm supposed to come up with something.
Miller High Life.
Don't have one. Go for a
Bye, Manning.
Optimum. Yeah, Optimum. For if you want to get really fucked up and have only four beers, that'll cost you $10.